Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
His words program Patriots talk across the country.
The clap.
Two-time intramural champions up at St. A's. I figured in prominently the wide.
Get up to date on the latest Patriot storylines with Tommy Curran.
So why is he so damn special that we have to call him Tom E. Curran?
Now on Dale and Keith.
Fourth and final hour, Dale and Keith, Sports Radio WEEI. Nick Fitzy Stevens with us as he is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And joining us on the Harbor One Hotline, NBC Sports Boston, New England Patriots reporter Tom E. Curran. Hello, Tom.
Dale, how's everything?
Great. How are you?
I am top of the world. Couldn't be better. A little snow. Got some wet snow down our way.
Sure.
And, it's good snowball snow.
Mm-hmm. A little fluffier here, and snowball's probably not as good. It could be an unprecedented offseason in the National Football League ever, as far as movement at the quarterback position, perhaps even franchise-caliber quarterbacks like Deshaun Watson. There's no doubt, in my opinion, that the Patriots are going to move on from Cam Newton, but where are they going to go?
I'm just writing about the latest car that all us dogs are chasing, the Patriots included, which would be Matthew Stafford. But to me, I think that they would be more of a mid-tier team that will try its luck in the draft, meaning mid-tier free agent, a Mariota, a Brissett, whoever they deem worthy of chasing and securing, and then to play it in the draft. But that's the hardest thing about this, guys, is do you force it in the first round with a Mac Jones or a Kyle Trask, who certainly don't seem to me to be first-round quarterbacks, or do you say, you know what, we're going to take that good linebacker and see if Trask or Jones, if we take him in the second round, are players who we can develop, or somebody else?
And the tricky thing, Tom, is it seems like with quarterbacks, whether they're available as free agents or maybe you get one in a trade, they're sort of either the $20 million or more quarterback or like the less than $10 million quarterback is kind of what it feels like. And so even if you end up with a middle-of-the-road talent, chances are you're going to have to overpay for them unless it's somebody coming off a really bad year or maybe somebody that was a backup the year before. Like that middle ground doesn't seem to really exist at that position.
It's wild. Phil Perry actually pointed that out earlier this offseason. You know, Teddy Bridgewater is the floor for starters, and that's $20 million. And the high end is Mariota, his backup, and that's $10 million. And we can come up with instances throughout that group of guys residing in different spots. But, you know, say it's Alex Smith, for instance. Say that ends up being an option, whether or not he comes back to play. Mariota is certainly worth talking about. We can reel through them all, but I think that I don't think the Patriots know exactly what they're going to do. And what will be fascinating is the timeline of having to do it, guys, because do you jump at the beginning of free agency on a player, or do you say we're going to kind of slow play this and see what we get in the draft and then make the move? But we also understand, too, like you're referring to, Dale, you know, there's a Jared Goff possibility. There's a Jimmy Garoppolo possibility. There's Mitch Trubisky's out there. So there is, as you said, unprecedented potential for movement.
I'll wear a Tom Brady Jets jersey before we ever see Jared Goff as the quarterback of the Patriots. It's no, you don't think Jared Goff would ever. I mean, the Rams may shake free of that giant contract this offseason, but you don't think a guy like Belichick would ever have any interest like in a guy like that. I mean, don't they value intelligence and your ability to be sort of an on-field coach a hell of a lot more than not knowing where the sun rises and having a strong arm?
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame you for saying that because his contract and so many of these quarterback contracts have gone so bananas that you can't look at it with a straight face. In a vacuum, would Jared Goff be under consideration for the Patriots? I would hope so. He's a good player. He can throw it. I mean, he's got his limitations, as we have seen, but he's not horrendous. But at $30 million, that's cuckoo. Same way it's cuckoo for Jimmy Garoppolo at $27 million. You know, it's funny because Brady somewhat depressed the market for a long time. But as he got to, you know, his 40s and late 30s, other teams just said, screw it, I don't care what Brady makes. Or agents did and said, my Aaron Rodgers wants this, or I can't come up with another good example, but now everybody's making it, whether it's Wentz, Goff, Watson, Mahomes, you name it. Everybody's well into the 30s.
Would the return of Matt Patricia to the Patriots in whatever unspecified role he has have some adverse effect on the possibility of acquiring Matthew Stafford?
I will quote Justin Rogers from the Detroit News because I just cut and pasted his conversation that we had. He said the two sides got off to a rocky start in year one. In New England, Tom Brady was treated like any other player, and Patricia came in and tried to do something similar in Detroit, criticized Stafford in a team meeting using some adult language, and that was not appreciated. Years two and three, Patricia came in and tried to reset the relationship. I can't see that being a hang-up to preventing Stafford from coming to New England.
Oh.
So there you have it, straight off of my control V.
Mm. Tom, where do you come down generally on the idea of a quarterback making $25-plus million joining this team if you know that the surrounding talent may not be there? Is it a waste, or do you view it as, well, you have to have a quarterback to do anything in this league, so you got to spend the money?
I would, because of the number of Patriots issues that need to be addressed, I would be more on the side of just get your edge rusher, make sure those offensive linemen you want are coming back, figure out what you're going to do at wide receiver and tight end, spend at linebacker if you need to and Dante Hightower doesn't come back, then worry about whether or not you have enough left over to spend 10 or 25 at quarterback. That would be my contention. So I would lean towards lesser stuff first and get your Mariota or your Brissett or your Folesian type player and then worry about the other stuff.
But you'd have
excuse me, and worry about that other stuff, then worry about the quarterback.
But like with Stafford, you'd have to make a trade, and they're fielding the offers.
Yep.
But with Mariota, you'd have to make a trade because he's on the second of his 2-year deal with the Raiders. So he's mm-hmm. not. You can't. If he were in free agency, I think it would almost be not a slam dunk, but there'd be a good chance. But at this point, you'd have to trade him, and I don't know. I'm not sure exactly what it would take to rest a backup away from the Raiders. But Tom, if you had to today just make your pick where you think Matthew Stafford ends up, it would be
Indianapolis.
Same. Yep.
Yeah, Indianapolis makes the most sense. The Patriots have more draft resources just in terms of the pick that they have in the first round is higher than Indianapolis's. But I think if you're Stafford and they're working in concert to try and find him his best landing spot, Stafford would say, I would much rather go to Indianapolis, guys. I know Bill Belichick is Bill Belichick, but I'm a dome guy. I don't want to throw in Buffalo. I don't want to throw in New York. I'm 33 years old. I want to stay in domes, and Houston's got a dome, and Indianapolis has a dome, and Tennessee and Nashville are warm weather cities. Excuse me, Tennessee and Jacksonville are warm weather locations. I'll play against those teams in my division. Please don't send me to New England.
Do we have any idea at this point, Tom, whether Bill Belichick has begun the process of reaching out to last season's opt-outs, and particularly Dante Hightower, about what their plans are for the upcoming season?
No, I don't categorically know. My inclination would be that right now he's got an idea. For instance, Brandon Bolden is a lock to come back. Everything that Patrick Chung has indicated is that he is more likely than not. And then you have Hightower and Cannon to make their decisions, and guys like Matt Lacoste, Marquise Lee. So right now I think it's about draft. Draft, because they have a lot of work to make up because they haven't had opportunities to shop at those guys the way that they normally would to shop them and scout them. And they don't have the manpower with Casario and Monty Austin Ford elsewhere. So they do want to get that indication, though. I'm quite positive of that because it also impacts Dale, the cap situation, significantly with Hightower. If he's not coming back, there's another $8 or $9 million into your pocket.
Now, with some of the offseason coaching news, you know, Jerod Mayo gets an interview with the Eagles. Matt Patricia's coming back in a certain role. Would this be the year where Bill names a defensive coordinator in your mind? Do you think he names Steve the defensive coordinator, or is there some move to be made there?
The indications I'm getting are that that is truly a collaboration right now. That it is a Steve Belichick, Gerard Mayo, Bill Belichick collaboration throughout the week. And that landscape indicates to me that giving a title could reflect badly on the guy who doesn't get the title. Mm-hmm. So if Mayo's getting head coaching opportunities and Steve Belichick's named defensive coordinator, then Mayo has to go to his next head coaching opportunity and explain why he's still the, you know, assistant linebacker. At least now he's got, can go in and explain, well, who's the defensive coordinator? Well, it's kind of all of us. So to me, this lack of naming people that Bill Belichick engages in, while ostensibly it's to protect guys from criticism, also works against them when it comes to being courted for their new jobs. Casario experienced it, I think, a little bit over the course of time, certainly in the salary. Flores had to overcome it. I don't think that it necessarily does the loyal coach any favors when he is looking for his next opportunity.
I'm sure you'll be paying attention to the activities in the Clearwater area over the next week and a half or so, getting excited for Super Bowl 55. Probably weren't that surprised that Tampa was able to upset the Packers last Sunday. And no, we're not going to entertain the idea of Aaron Rodgers coming to the Patriots, because that's just flat out silly. But, you know, having covered Brady for so long, Tom, when he says, you know, hey, this one's a little bit different, this one's really special, how special do you think, as Patriots fans turn their attention to Tampa and are rooting for Brady next week, how special do you think this one is to him, and how special and enjoyable is this whole process on another team, not there with Belichick, you know, with the spotlight on him in a different way?
I think it's special in a different way, in the extreme way that all the others were. You know, 2018 was about his own team and the nation saying he's done, he can't do it anymore. And you saw that exhibited with Edelman saying, you're too old, you're too old. And that was the driving force, proving he didn't suck. 2016 was about sticking it to the NFL. 2014 was about, you know, getting the bookend validation type Super Bowl. I think this one is about, to him, honestly, hokey as it might sound, sharing it with other guys who might not have had the opportunity, whether it's Lavonte David or Devin White or, you know, all those players there who might not have experienced it otherwise, Leonard Fournette, and with Arians and Byron Leftwich. I mean, he's worked side by side with those guys all of this year, and they've had to put up with a lot of criticism, a lot of second guessing, probably a lot of tension and pressure that was exerted that only accompanies a guy like Tom Brady. And if they get the payoff at the end, that's probably more rewarding than Tom being able to turn around and say, and Bill gave up on me, you know. I think he really doesn't engage in the same foolishness that people like me do.
Nobody does. I was kidding. Well, Tom. Yeah. I was kidding about that part. Look, there's no doubt, win or lose, Tom Brady will be back next year. Is there some doubt in your mind about the viability of returns for Rob Gronkowski and Antonio Brown?
I think Brown would be more of an X factor, but I think because you just don't know what could happen between now and August with him. I mean, he's well overdue. But with Gronk, he stated he wants to come back. He has been a factor even when he's not catching the ball as a pass blocker. So I think absolutely that both of those guys, Brady and Gronk, could be back. And to me, Brown would be the X factor. But they have so many guys who are up. It's Lavonte David and Shaq Barrett are up. Godwin's up. So there's a lot for them to work through, too, heading into 2021.
Out of the six new head coaches, as it stands right now, there will be a seventh at some point.
Maybe.
Which one do you think is the best hire, and which one do you think so far has been the worst hire?
I think that the best hire – well, the worst hire is Dan Campbell.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't imagine. I was stunned when I flipped on Twitter and saw the number of people like, Dan Campbell's killing this. Killing what?
And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off.
And on the way down, I'm going to bite another one off.
I swear. I mean,
he sounded like a fool.
At the end of Quick Slants, I said, you know what? I grew up in Pembroke, and that is not the mean streets. But in the 70s and the 80s, there were like 3 to 5 families with 4 brothers that all talked like that. And you didn't want to cross them, but you didn't want them to be in charge of anything either. I mean, you can't have that. It's insane. No. It's hard to take serious. I mean, even Rex Ryan had the aura of, I'm just kind of kidding here.
Right.
This guy takes himself seriously with it. Mm-hmm. So that's the worst hire. Do you think Urban Meyer is the best hire?
No.
Yeah, see, I kind of do. Of the ones that have changed, either Urban Meyer or Robert Saleh, and Saleh's a bit of an unknown at this point.
Yeah, I kind of like Saleh more, even though I'm more of an offensive guy, and I know he's clearly a defensive guy. I think he deserves an opportunity anyway. No, Urban Meyer, I think he's like Nick Saban to me. I just don't think the college coach thing, but like that level of college coach, I don't think is going to translate well. He can't like recruit. He's going to take over a terrible team. And I don't think he's going to turn them
around. With the number one draft pick and $90 million free in cap.
Fitzy's okay. With me.
A lot of teams have had the number one pick. Do they turn it around?
Yeah, but it's not the same number one pick every year. This guy is generational.
Right, okay.
That's what they say.
Generational.
And Urban Meyer will be there for two or three years. He'll quit. He'll find something else that he wants to do.
Yeah, is Urban Meyer going to be there at 6 a.m. and stay till 9 p.m. every night? I mean, is he going to sleep there, or are things going to go south?
That's the thing. Remember Joe Gibbs came back and he was using an overhead projector? And people are like, what's he doing?
You
can't do that.
Fourier told us a story on our Facebook show a couple of months back about how Joe Gibbs used to try to incentivize the guys by being the practice player of the week. And the winner of the practice player of the week, Tom, used to get to drive old Joe's Cadillac around, except he didn't have an Escalade. He had like an 80s one with like the chrome wheel on the back of the trunk.
Yeah. That's why Brady was so pissed he didn't get Patriot of the Week.
Good about it.
Hey, yeah,
yeah, exactly. Tom, are you? I got this crazy idea that, like, in some way, that it'll actually be good for the Patriots if Brady wins next Sunday, and it's a tall task going up against the Chiefs, who they already lost to this season. But do you think that in some ways, if Brady wins next Sunday, it'll light an even bigger fire under Belichick's ass, and that he'll be so mad that Brady is just putting it in his face for the entire world to see? Literally billions of people will be going, why did Bill Belichick let Tom Brady go? That he'll try even that much harder to get back on top and beat his ass next fall when he comes to Foxborough.
I've heard that a lot of times, and I just think that Bill Belichick's pride in his work and the effort that he puts in, and even if he has not had the greatest run and he's made decisions that I disagree with, mm-hmm. his work ethic has never wavered. So the fact that he is sucking on 7-9 right now with no answer, I can't imagine anything that happens next week motivating him any more than having people like me on a Zoom call grill him about the draft. I mean, honestly, I think that the whatever, regardless of what Brady does, to be questioned, has to be as grossly irritating for him as anything that Brady would do. So he's plenty motivated already, I'm sure. And everything I'm hearing too, you know, from down there is that the Patriots are going to be extremely and uncharacteristically aggressive in this offseason.
Good.
Yeah. All right.
Good.
Tom, we appreciate the time as always. Thank you.
Okay. Take care, guys.
Hey, Tom
E. Curran, NBC Sports Boston, joining us. You guys have probably already seen this. Another horrific story out of Seattle. Chad Wheeler of the Seattle Seahawks tried to kill his girlfriend because she wouldn't bow to him. Emmanuel Acho has got a series of photographs, a before photo of this young lady, an after photo in which she looks like she's been in a car crash, and a piece of her police statement in which she said, what was most terrifying was how cold he was. He thought I was dead on my bed and continued to eat dinner. When I ran into the bathroom, he said, wow, you're still alive, while sipping on a smoothie.
Well, who among us has never done that?
Oh, my Lord.
Wow, that's the kind of horrible, I'm not sure how to...
Yep, Pete can't cheer that one up. The Seahawks have said, we are aware of the situation, still gathering information, but the picture of this, the before and after picture, the Instagram photo of this young lady, beautiful young woman, I mean, you know, very attractive. The after picture, she looks like she's been in a car crash. and allegedly, reportedly, at the hands of her boyfriend, who, according to the police report, beat her because she wouldn't bow to him.
Well, he'll get cut soon, and that'll be an easy one for the Seahawks
today.
To do. Yep. Did you see the new Army Hammer thing? The parent, what he wanted to do to his...
Oh, God.
You hear this?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Didn't he brand her or something
like
that?
Yeah, he carved an A into his former girlfriend's body and then told her that he wanted to take out her ribs and cook them up and eat them. The old
that was another
ribs.
Mid-pandemic thing that we did when there was no
rib?
Sports was when Army Hammer's kid was sucking his toe.
Remember, I don't remember that.
People kind of gave a pass for it.
Wait, pardon me?
I don't remember that.
You don't remember
all.
That?
No,
I don't.
We did a segment on it, I'm pretty sure.
I don't remember
like
what
April
we did an hour
nothing
ago.
Nothing happening.
Wait, Army
his
Hammer
kid was
has
like sucking his toes, yeah.
Sucking on his dad's toes.
Yep.
No, I don't like that.
It was on his wife's Instagram.
No, that's...
Listen, I'm not going to tell another man how to raise his kid, but I don't care for that.
No, parenting my own is tough enough. I'm not going to try to tell someone else how to do their job.
But I don't like that.
That said, how do you go on when you know that your dad, or how do you go about respecting your parents once you find out that your dad branded people and also wanted to eat them?
Barbecue up some ribs, and he's a bit of a vampire. Is what it
that
seems
too.
Like.
Yeah.
He has a thirst for human blood, and he wants to cook and eat people, too. There's a little bit of cannibalism, a little bit of vampire.
Maybe if he had cooked and eaten a few more people, then maybe that Lone Ranger movie wouldn't have sucked so bad.
Oh, come on.
I'm not sure it could have saved it.
Don't think that's how that works.
Yeah, I don't think that anything
you sure?
could have saved
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's not like they give him superpowers or something.
And like, the more stuff that comes out, are they going to allow it?
Fix it in post.
Is he going to be able to be... Well, speaking of fixing it in post, is he going to be able to be in these... movies that he's already filmed. He's in like two or three movies, maybe four movies that come out this year.
They'll have Christopher Plummer do act.
There
over
he is.
I was going to say, yeah, you know, listen, you saw Rogue One. You saw the finale of Mandalorian season two.
I did. Yes,
you
I
know,
did.
You could just put in someone else's face. You could alter the voice a little bit.
I guess that's what they're going to have to do. They're gonna have to, it's easy to take them out of the movie poster, but for all the scenes in the movie that have already been shot, can't be all that easy.
Maybe there are people that are excited. It's like maybe his performance will be influenced by his proclivities and his bizarre off-screen behavior.
You think it'll help him?
Sure.
You think his
I mean,
thirst
the
for
the
human blood?
The commitment that Heath Ledger showed gave him the performance of a lifetime in The Joker.
Rest in peace. Yeah.
R.I.P.
For him.
And who was the other? And I'm sorry, his name slips my mind. Kevin, the guy who self-imploded.
John Leguizamo.
Well, no, him too. But he had done most of a movie, and they ended up having to reshoot.
Yeah, that was Kevin Spacey. With
no, it was Kevin Spacey for the
Spacey.
Netflix
that,
show.
That was it. And,
yeah.
And they ended up having to reshoot everything.
Yeah, they did with Christopher Plummer.
So do they do that for a movie, too? Do they just say...
Depending on the size of his...
I guess...
That was a movie. That was All the Money in the World.
Oh, it was. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. I thought they did
House
something
of Cards.
Too.
They just killed off the character. Didn't
yeah,
got
it. Okay,
they,
cool.
They
yeah,
right.
I thought they reshot a bunch of the movie
and made
it.
Yeah,
it was.
They
it
reshot
movie.
Every single scene he was in with Christopher Plummer filming the scenes with nobody else around.
But it was only like 8 minutes of like footage, right? Like ultimately, they only had to do like 8 minutes of it wasn't that drastic. Still, that's a lot of money.
Oh yeah, it is. Think about how much money.
Oh, it's still
terrible. Justice League had to spend to Photoshop Henry Cavill's mustache out, so that's just a mustache.
Wait,
that was the
wait,
dumbest thing ever.
Wait, hold on. They let him keep his mustache?
He had to.
No,
it was for Mission Impossible.
He had to do reshoots. They had to do, so he already filmed his movie without a mustache.
Yep.
Then, they because the movie was so bad, they're like, we got to reshoot so much stuff. They brought him back in, but he was already filming Mission Impossible where he was the villain with
the
mustache.
MI6,
he's like, I'm not losing the mustache. So he does the whole scene, and you can tell. You look at it, and you're like, something's wrong with this guy's face. And they're like, oh, yeah, that's because they had to CGI out a mustache.
Now, does
the
anyone...
whole opening scene's distracting in Justice League.
Okay, now I have to look at it for that with that context, number one.
It's
they'll probably even have tried to fix it further now on this Justice League 2.0, whatever.
Oh, the Snyder Cut, he just has a goatee.
Snyder
he's
Cut.
Like, screw it.
Right, and he's
badass Superman.
He's wearing like an Affliction T-shirt.
Yeah,
yeah. He's like super emoed out.
Sideburns, like that's Superman.
Had anyone ever told Henry Cavill that you can wear a fake mustache?
Yeah, but they wanted the real thing. I think in Mission Impossible.
Yeah, it's MI6. Tom Cruise is like,
I grew this puppy.
Everything is real.
Saying, we're not doing
Impossible.
A fake mustache. Uh-huh. Yeah. Here.
Hey, Tom Cruise is doing his own base jumping.
If I can hang off the side of an Airbus, you can keep a mustache.
Tom Cruise's ass is fake in those movies. So why, where is he getting
how
off
dare
on the
you,
mustache?
John?
How dare you? That is
not.
Dare
that guy's doing body squats.
Look at it. It's like when they have a fake baby and you can clearly tell it's a doll.
Before Chris said,
what movie was
you
that?
Dare,
that was so
you
obvious.
Dare to say that Tom Cruise uses a stunt butt?
He does not.
That
does
not.
His own stunt butts.
That's America's butt.
If that's
no,
not
that would
real.
Be Chris America's Evans.
Ass. Well, that's the new America's ass.
Yeah.
And other things.
Yeah, we saw that.
Yeah. All right. Well, this conversation took a turn.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. When we come back, we'll give you the latest on what's going on with the Bruins after last night's game. And Rich Keefe's new favorite player, Nick Ritchie. That's coming up in just a couple of minutes.
I've always liked him. I've tried to tell you guys about him.
First, Chris Scheim has to trend.
Dale and Keefe recapping last night's Bruins win.
To Smith, he scores! That's how you do it! Fight off Pittsburgh and win 3-2 in overtime!
On Sports Radio WEEI.
Nick Ritchie, okay, not a lot of games last year. He stinks.
Ritchie scores for Marchand!
And, like, useless. Like, no offensive ability.
Krejci to Bergeron. Turns and wheels, and Ritchie scores!
And then doing stupid stuff, and now you're shorthanded because of Nick Ritchie.
McAvoy. Marchand has Dumoulin down. Ritchie scores!
Big dude, but stinks. I think he stinks. But they got to replace Ritchie. I don't think it's going to work.
I don't think they're going to replace him. For the foreseeable future.
Get him out of there. What are they doing?
I think they're going to hold
off. It's like tied
with
Sidney Crosby for points right now.
Yeah, it was Sidney's.
Yeah, Sidney might be better.
Going to the All-Star game. His Madden rating is going up every day.
He did score his third power play goal of the season last night for the Bruins. Bruins.
Score one even strength, Dale. Then you'll impress me.
We'll get there sooner or later. Here's the deal. Like last year, the Bruins, to use Rich's term, really stunk in like shootouts. They can't lose this year. They have lost a game in overtime this year with like 1 second left in overtime. But they also win in overtime again last night. They are at this moment 2 points behind Washington in the East Division standings. Washington has played one more game than the Bruins have. They play Pittsburgh Thursday night, and then they've got back-to-back games in Washington against the Caps Saturday and Monday. It is a byproduct of this COVID-19 caused schedule. I love back-to-backs.
Yeah, I do too.
I love everything about it. You get a little hatred built up. You get a little animosity going. I think it's the best.
Well, I also like, for 1 year anyway, playing each team 8 times. Like, I like the back-to-backs, and I like the building that up, because even though it's a shortened season, you're going to get these matchups a ton of times. So, yeah, you don't get Bruins-Montreal, Bruins-Toronto. That's too bad. Maybe you'll get them in the playoffs. Who knows? But at least for these games like Philly and Washington and Pittsburgh, good teams, good opponents, and good little mini rivalries as you get through the season. So that I've enjoyed so far.
If you missed what Scheim told you during trending, Jake DeBrusk got hurt last night. He took a clean hip check from Sidney Crosby earlier in the game. Continued, played a couple of shifts after that, and then he took a hit from Brandon Tanev that kind of knocked him for a loop. He got up immediately, you know, tried to continue playing, but he has what Bruce Cassidy now calls a lower body injury, because they never tell you anymore. He absolutely will not play tomorrow, according to Cassidy, but they're not saying if this is a long-term thing. They're listing him as day-to-day, but he won't play tomorrow. Tuukka did. It looked like he pulled something in his hip or something on the first goal that he gave up last night. Was able to continue, finish the game, was terrific, as he has been all season long. But Bruce Cassidy said he was sore today. He was not going to play tomorrow night anyway. Mm-hmm. The way the schedule was set up, Halak was going to play tomorrow night anyway. And Cassidy said they're, hoping that he's going to be ready to go Saturday, which is when he's supposed to play again against the Caps.
And is that when Pasternak's coming back?
Ooh.
I think there's a really good chance you'll see Pasternak on Saturday. He won't play tomorrow. Bruce Cassidy said, I'm not ruling him out for Saturday. I also think you'll get Matt Grizzlick back tomorrow. He was close to playing last night, was literally a game-time decision. In fact, when the Bruins sent out the first set of line combinations for the game, he was in. And then they said, oh, nope, update here. And then they had him pulled out, and they had Connor Clifton in. So I think you'll see him tomorrow as well.
So pretty good. So tomorrow night will be, their seventh game of the year?
Yep.
So if there's a chance that Pasternak might only miss 7 games, at least to start the year. really good. I mean, think about it. We thought Brad Marchand might miss a handful of games. Didn't
and he
miss
missed
any.
None. Mm-hmm.
Pastrnak, we thought, would miss even more, and he could be back soon. And, I mean, they're 4-1-1 even without Pastrnak. So all that is looking pretty positive.
Yeah, 4-2-1 at absolute worst, and Pastrnak will only have missed an eighth of the regular season. If he can stay healthy, if he can stay out on the ice and there's not a load management issue coming off the injury, that'd be fantastic.
Mm-hmm. You're still going to have issues going forward, not necessarily the Bruins, but NHL teams in general. They had a game last night. The Vegas Golden Knights had a game. Their entire coaching staff was in COVID quarantine, literally the entire staff. They had a coach who tested positive. Obviously, the other coaches were considered in close contact. The GM came down from upstairs and coached the team. And for a staff, they had the staff of their minor league team coaching with them as well. I mean, that's the sort of thing you're dealing with here. And some of these numbers, because they've already had a bunch of postponements, you know, you've got teams who are literally going to play like 52 games in 100 days, 53 games in 102 days, and things like that. They're at that point where they can't afford a whole bunch more of postponements, and they're going to get them. It's going to happen.
I mean, you're seeing it in the NBA too, and they're just going to have to make up as many games as possible, get to the end of the year, see where teams are at, see how far behind you are, and then just try to make them up.
I will say that what you're seeing from the Bruins now after a bit of a slow start, look, their results have been fine. They've only lost one game out of the first six, but they had the slow start. Offense looked like it was struggling a little bit. They kind of put things back together in the two games against Philadelphia, and defensively, this team has been a rock. And the two kids who were being inserted on the blue line, Lauzon and Zaboral, have certainly not played like kids. And, you know, they're not giving up shots, generally speaking. They took some dumb penalties last night and, what, five or six power play opportunities against, which jacked up the shots a little bit. But for the most part, they're not giving up anything.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I think it's early, obviously. That's sort of a caveat with all this. But Don Sweeney's decision to go with these young guys and to say, hey, Chara, you can come back, but here's what your role is going to be. And also not to throw too much money at Torrey Krug and say, all right, we think we're going to be all right on the power play. We think we're going to be all right on the penalty kill. And the 5-on-5 might improve, you know, with these guys. And I think it's early, like I said, but that seems to be the right decision. I think they got that one right.
The power play is like fourth or fifth in the league as we sit here today. The penalty kill is number one in the league as we sit here today.
You know, and it's number one, or it's number whatever you say, the power play, like without a 50-goal score.
Yeah, without Pastrnak,
So it's like you took last year's power play team, which was great, and you take Krug and Pastrnak off. It's still really, really good, and you're going to get Pastrnak back. So it's not like, you know, I feel like every time we bring this up, I'm like ripping Torrey Krug, and I'm not because I like Torrey Krug, and he was good. But I feel like where there's so much talent out there, even a guy like Nick Ritchie can run into some goals when you have other talented players. I'm not ready to give that one up just yet.
I could tell. after what was a dismal season for the Red Sox and a disappointing season for the Patriots, it would appear that your two winter sports teams are giving you something, some hope for watching throughout the winter months. Celtics are doing very well, and they're finally starting to get back to some semblance of health. Bruins are off to a good start, 4-1-1 start, and oh, by the way, the 50-goal score is coming back. So, you know, your outlook for both the Celtics and the Bruins is decidedly positive right now.
Oh, yeah, it definitely is, and I think both in a situation where they have young stars, too, so it's not even – I think, obviously, the Celtics younger than the Bruins are, but it's definitely like, okay, you're going to be good for the next couple of years, hopefully, whereas the other teams have a rebuild ahead of them.
And I think the average fan right now, given how much football we've consumed and the ride that people are going on into early February because of Tom Brady, they're probably thinking to themselves, all right, now that I got sports back in my life and I'm still not going to be able to go to a game or have an in-person experience for a while, if the Celtics and the Bruins can just be this level of competitive and good into April when we get baseball back and then you got the draft and you feel you might be able to actually go outside and go some places, that's all you could ask. I mean, if they can stay this level for the next 2 months, I can't imagine the average fan would ask for much more.
I think it'll be fun. I think that, you know, you don't have Red Sox and Patriots games to watch, but you do have fun Bruins and Celtics games to watch. By the way, Red Sox just my own opinion, not based on anything other than reading the tea leaves here. Despite what Rob Manfred said, they're not going to start spring training on time. And they're not going to play 162 games. I know maybe that was more aspirational when he said that, but it seems less and less likely that that's going to happen.
But the good news with the Sox is they have been in talks with a lot of players. Like, they have talked to and shown interest in lots of baseball players. They haven't signed any of them, but they've been in the mix, which is great to see.
And at least they're starting to add some pieces here. You know, Ottavani's a good – I thought that was a good move.
Ottavino, right?
Yeah,
Adam Ottavino I like a lot. That was good. But as far as all these other free agent talks, it was just stupid, all the guys that they talked to. That's all
the reports were.
It was like,
I'm just talking about it, comical.
They're
adding some pitching pieces, which are at least making me feel a little bit better about things here, because for a while it was like, God, are they gonna bring anybody in here to throw the baseball?
Yeah, this would be another year where if they don't play 162, I don't think the Red Sox would complain about it.
Yeah, and if they play like they did last year, I don't think any of us from the cheap seats or back home are going to be complaining about it either.
No. We'll be all good.
Just offering that up. Yep.
And then if Tom Curran is right and the Patriots are going to be very aggressive in this offseason.
Uncharacteristically aggressive.
Which, you know, let's be honest, if you're a Patriots fan, you're, you know, golf clap for Bill Belichick. If he does that, then you could have interest in all of the teams over these next few months, theoretically.
Oh, they would definitely steal. I mean, any one signing they have is going to hijack the other three teams, no matter what's going on with them. We'll see. I mean, uncharacteristically aggressive. I mean, you think back just in the 20-year history of the Patriots, I would say they were aggressive a handful of times. Obviously, Randy Moss, Wes Welker, Dante Stallworth, that was aggressive. Roosevelt Colvin, Adalys Thomas, Stephon Gilmore, trading a first for Cooks. So there are examples of it. I just wonder
Some have worked to better degrees than others. Roosevelt Colvin ended up being a good move until he got hurt.
And they got hurt.
Adalys Thomas, not so much.
Adalys Thomas was actually pretty good in that Super Bowl, but you're right. From what they spent on him and then how it kind of fizzled out, that wasn't great. But they've taken big swings before, and I just wonder, all right, what is available to them? What are they going to do? It's going to be fun.
A lot of different ways they could go. I can't believe I'm prioritizing watching the Senior Bowl this Saturday afternoon because I'm so interested in all of the guys that are going to be available. And since the Patriots make such a priority out of taking guys, team captains, four-year starters, seniors, Belichick doesn't like the younger guys that might come in and still not have a good head on their shoulders. So if you're somebody like myself who just can't get enough Patriots and wants to do a little armchair GM work or some sofa scouting, Senior Bowl is
your
cup of tea.
Right into the Royal Rumble. You got yourself a nice little sports weekend.
Do a little wake and bake with a virtual Pro Bowl on Sunday.
Love it.
And remember, a year ago, wasn't it the Senior Bowl where Kyle Duggar kind of made a name for himself and brought himself more attention than he was going to get otherwise? And he ended up being a more than serviceable player for the Patriots, maybe based on how things went there.
Right.
Coming up. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, he's all right.
He's all right.
Yeah.
Coming up next on What Else You Got, a question from the Twitter sphere. Can you name a more random wide receiver that most people will just barely remember? We might have a name or two for you. Dale and Keefe with Fitzy, Sports Radio, WEEI.
Dale and Keefe.
Middays 10 to 2.
On WEEI.
Hey, real quickly, as we get to What Else You Got, just an update, because the Pittsburgh Penguins are in town. Out of the blue, 10 minutes ago, the Penguins announced that their general manager, Jim Rutherford, has resigned, citing personal reasons. The assistant GM has been promoted to interim GM. They will begin a search immediately for a new general manager, but I think that kind of came out of the blue for everybody, where 10 minutes ago, the Penguins general manager said, I'm done.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Wiggy. All right, let's get to some things that we might have missed earlier in the program.
What else you got?
Fitzy.
You know, Dale, I like to always involve the social media sphere, bring a little something random to the table on What Else You Got. So this tweet caught my eye right before me bedtime last night, and it seems like a fun game to play. Thought we'd throw it out there. At NFL Robbie tweeted out, name a more random wide receiver that most people will just barely remember. And his I'll start was Jabbar Gaffney. I think that's a name that I think a lot of people would recommend. If you check the replies, There are so many wonderful answers and names that you watched growing up playing the game that you just never would have thought of again. And so many different celebrities and football writers and former players have now gotten involved. My contribution was, and tell me if this is too obscure, Webster Slaughter.
Well, definitely not too obscure. Webster Slaughter, Ernest Givens, Drew Hill, those guys dominated the Houston Oilers. Love that one.
Yeah, and the Browns and the Oilers.
Hayward Jeffries was on that team.
I love that offense. That's a really good one.
The
one that got out to a 35-3 lead and then blew it in Buffalo, yeah.
Kind of fell apart a little bit, but they could throw it. They could throw it around. Oh. I went with Riedel Anthony.
Riedel Anthony, no kidding.
Riedel Anthony was a first-round pick.
Where'd he play?
By the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He played in Florida with Danny Werfel and Ike Hilliard, and had like a 4 or 5 year run, and then it was just done. I don't know if he got hurt or what happened, but he was a top 20 pick in the draft.
Oh, where's Ike Hilliard these days? What a stiff! Could have been so great. Somebody just tweeted at me. How about remember the good old days of Al Toon?
Al Toon, sure, his name.
He's great. Jets.
He went to Wisconsin, I believe.
Dale, his son was on the Saints a couple years ago, I believe, or his nephew, Nick Toon.
Is it Nick Toon?
Oh, yep, that's not a Nickelodeon joke. That is actually his name.
Nick Toon. I know. Yeah.
Didn't Al Toon have, was he one of the guys who had concussion issues that kind of precipitated the end of his career, if I remember right?
Anyone here for the Corin Robinson reference?
Corin Robinson, another first round pick.
Yeah.
Good
right?
one. Yeah, like
Dale,
one.
who would you throw out there?
If I wanted to cheat and you know, obscure wide receiver from my days of broadcasting Patriots games, 1989, I could give you Glenn Antrim, who was a wide receiver out of Connecticut.
That's a deep pull.
That's a deep pull. I have literally never heard that.
No one would.
Mine was the Miami Dolphins guy, Brian Hartline.
Brian Hartline was good. Yeah.
Hartline was a nice little player.
Hartline was one of those guys who got the bag from the Browns and then mailed it in after that.
Yep.
Like Dwayne Bowe did the same thing. Muhammad Massaquah.
I could give you Kittrick Taylor.
Joe Jarvisius.
Joe
Jarvisius was good. He played with Curtis Enos at Penn State.
Oh, Curtis Enos. What a terrible, like the Bears are still regretting that one.
I might do a random college football player tweet. That'd probably generate a lot of good stuff.
Any love for Roscoe Parrish?
Roscoe Parrish was good. See, Peerless Price.
Lee Evans.
Oh, Peerless Price.
Is Wayne Corbett obscure enough?
No,
Shrevet
was a star.
He's not obscure at all. Yeah.
He's too popular.
What else you got?
Rich.
Speaking of wide receivers, DK Metcalf and Justin Jefferson were asked to come up with their top five wide receivers currently in the NFL. And interesting list, DK Metcalf has Julio Jones number one, himself number two, DeAndre Hopkins three, Devontae Adams four, and then, like I would have, a tie for fifth with Stephon Diggs, OBJ, and A.J. Brown. And then Justin Jefferson's list, also Julio Jones, number one. He has Devontae Adams, two. He has himself, Justin Jefferson, three. DK Metcalf, four. And DeAndre Hopkins, five. This was tweeted out by Bleacher Report's Gridiron Twitter account, to which DeAndre Hopkins quote tweeted that with the Ice Cube by Felicia. So he was apparently upset as he was ranked third and fifth respectively on their list. But good little exercise. I love how they're both very confident in themselves, and yet they're like, well, I'm not as good as Julio Jones. Better than everybody else, but not Julio Jones.
What else you got?
So Jason Light's getting a lot of pub, obviously, as the general manager of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as they get ready to play in the Super Bowl. We gave you some cuts earlier today when he was on the Peter King podcast. Today he did a Zoom session for the members of the media, and he had a great story about hearkening back to when the Patriots decided they were going to draft Tom Brady.
I can't take any credit for Tom being drafted. I do know that Coach Belichick really had his eye on him for a long time. You know, we took him in the sixth. We didn't need a quarterback at the time. He had a much higher than that. He and Scott Pioli had a much higher than that on the board. The conversation started with, if I recall correctly, the third round. But and he was still sitting there in the sixth, and they took him. I wish I could take credit for it.
So that kind of flies in the face of urban legend of this thing, is that Dick Rabine had to basically pound the table and say, no, you got to take this guy. But according to Jason Light, both Bill Belichick and Scott Pioli were higher on Tom Brady than anybody else.
Yeah, so I call malarkey on that one. I think as time goes on, things have certainly changed. But if they liked him so much, they probably wouldn't have taken something called Jeff Marriott in the fifth round or Antoine Harris in the sixth round over Tom Brady. Scott Pioli's the one that said it right, Dale. He's like, yeah. Listen, if we really, really liked the guy, we would have taken him a lot higher. So, come on.
All right, we got to get out of here. Fitzy, we'll see you on Friday.
Can't wait.
We'll be back tomorrow with Andy Hart. Peter King will join us as well. OMF is coming up next. See ya.
Flaccid.
That's all, folks.